And before we begin this video, I'd like to acknowledge that we are standing on the traditional territories of the Haudenosaunee, Anishinaabe, and Wendat Huron peoples. And as I say that, I want to acknowledge that I have a problematic relationship with land acknowledgements. And I'll tell you why. People tack on land acknowledgements to meetings, performances, all sorts of things, and they think that's enough. That they've done something good for us. But the thing about a land acknowledgement is it has to be accompanied with action. Being here tonight is part of a way forward, but it's only a start. It's not done after tonight. So right when we begin, what I want you to think of is, what can you do? What are some positive actions you can take to make a difference, to make a change? Because in Canada right now, truth and reconciliation is feeling a lot like hopes and prayers. Empty words with no action behind them. And we can do better. Wes?
Good evening. Hello. My name is Wesley, and I wore blue tonight as we invited everyone else to wear orange, because if you were close enough, you could see that I have blue eyes. And when most people meet me, they see my eyes. That's the number one feature that people recognize Wesley Wood for. But what they don't recognize is that I am Indigenous. That I have blue eyes, and I used to have blonde hair, just like my little family here. But I am Indigenous. I'm Métis. My great-great-grandmother was Ojibwe. And she fell in love with a young European Frenchman. Has anybody ever fallen in love with before? Just a little bit? Have you ever found that's been difficult with your family or your culture? If you're LGBTQ, especially maybe during Pride Month, we want to acknowledge you as well. That sometimes falling in love with people who are quote-unquote different can be very, very difficult. And so my great-great-grandmother and my great-great-grandfather, they were in love and they had to make a terrible decision. What do we do? Are we going to be Indigenous or are we going to be white? Being Indigenous meant we're going to take your children. We're going to take your land. We're going to tell you where you have to live, and we're going to penalize you for it. Or you can just be white. What decision would you make? For your family, for your children, for your great, great grandchildren, what decision would you make? My great-great-grandmother, my great-great-grandfather made a decision. And when they had children, they told my great-grandfather, not the secret, but they told him the story. You are white. My great-grandfather had children and they told them not the secret. They didn't even tell them the story. They just grew up white. Until my parents came along, my mother specifically came along, and there was no story. There was no secret. She was just a white girl living in a white city. And then she has children, two of us. Until 15, maybe a few more years ago, my great aunt started sharing a little more of the secret. A little bit more of the story about how we weren't as white as we told we were. And so today I stand up here in front of you as a white guy with blue eyes and a blue shirt. And I have the utmost respect for my Indigenous family. Because I didn't grow up with the same restrictions, the same understanding, the same stereotypes, the same segregation that many people have. And so I mourn for my great-great-grandmother who had to make a terrible decision that was best for her children. I mourn that we live in a country that puts people in a situation where they have to make a terrible decision that's best for their children. I mourn for my children who grow up not knowing half of my life and half of my culture and half of my heritage that I never knew because it was best to be white. And so I have a vision that's not unique to me. I have a hope that's not unique to me, that someday, maybe hopefully soon, that we can stand here and celebrate that we don't see people put in decisions where they have to choose what's best, but just what's right for them as people and for them as cultures and them as heritage, for them whose sex or gender, that we can just celebrate and see each other for who we are, not saying who you have to be. And so I want to thank you so much for showing up tonight. I want to thank you so much for showing that you're in support of people like me who have lost so much that I don't even know, in hopes that there will be a generation of people who can regain more than they knew they ever lost. And so thank you so much. I pray and I hope that we won't just think better or make statements that could be better, that we as a people can act better. Because white isn't better. It's just different. It's just different. There's nothing wrong with different. But I'm not white. I am indigenous. I am Métis. And together we are equal. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Wesley. I'm going to say a couple words, and then we actually are going to open up the mic with Lysol wipes for anyone else who might like to come up. My name's Alexandra, and I'm here with some of the folks from Anti-Racism Quinty. We worked with our community this evening to get together tonight, and so we wish to acknowledge every human present here this evening. We honor your time. Oh, I just lost my words. Hold on here. We're gonna get there, sorry folks. Oh, I'm gonna speak, sorry. I can't speak for other people with just my voice when we work together to get here. So that's, again, important for me to know that as a white settler, I don't speak for other people with my voice. So we wish to acknowledge every human present here this evening. We honor your time and value your energy in this space right now. As we spend time in mourning, in collective grief and rage at the atrocities committed by the churches and the Canadian and British governments, we ask that we do not lose this feeling. We ask that we use this feeling to acknowledge and hold ourselves accountable as settlers on this land that we reside on, Turtle Island. We have enabled the genocide of First Nations to continue for far too long. It needs to end, as called upon by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. For the 215 Indigenous babies and children, and thousands of others still not home, we must write to our members of Parliament and members of Provincial Parliament and demand that full radar searches be funded at the site of the Mohawk Institute in Brantford, Ontario. This is not just an issue that happened in another province. This is an issue that is happening here in our communities as well. And so as we get together tonight in collective mourning and grief, we ask that tonight is not the end of what this is, but the beginning of the work that we have to do as white settlers, as settlers on this land. I speak to you. We have a lot of work to call forward. Read the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Read the calls to action that they have put there. Do what our Indigenous community members are asking us to do, please, as we come together and try to move forward. And at this time, we would really like to open up the microphone, particularly to those community members or anyone else who feels that they might like to come up and speak this evening, before we collectively hold some time in silence for those lives that have been lost. Is there anyone that might like to come up and speak?
What, nobody else? May I?
Absolutely, you may. Thank you.
I work in the family court system. It was my opportunity to work with a family who had a Canada census document that a relative in 1903, at the age of 6 months, died as a residential school, at a residential school. So, I'm not Indigenous, I'm a Canadian kid, but I'm a part of their lives. I have proof, one more piece of paper, that it was documented that a 6-month-old baby died that had been taken from its family. You don't know why, doesn't matter why. I'm just saying to you, I give a damn. That's it for me. Thank you.
I would just like to say that no amount of money or anything that the government gives us is going to erase the trauma that my elders have gone through and that I go through and every other child who has lived in a home with a residential school survivor. We go through a large amount of trauma, not just what they say to us, but some go through abuse, some go through a lot of things. I'm glad that I don't, but I have social anxiety. I have to, gonna have a panic attack.
You're doing great.
And I would just like a moment of silence for the 215 kids and counting. Please and thank you. That's all I want to say, and thank you all for coming out here and supporting us, because it truly does mean a lot to my community and any other community out there.
I already feel like I have already broken down just thinking about talking. My name is Brittany Brandt, and I just want to tell the story about how I've directly been affected. My father did not attend a residential school, but he did attend Indian day schools, and his family members were from a residential school. My father was molested when he was a kid. And that affected him his entire life. He was beaten. He was given up. He was sent away. He was forced to write with his right hand, even though he was left-handed, because it was a sign of the devil. He suffered from addiction and mental health and serious severe depression his whole life, until it finally took over, and in 2006 he shot himself in the head. So just because, you know, people like to say this doesn't affect us, it wasn't in our lifetime, fucking right it is. It affects us. It affects me. It affects my whole life. Everything I am is because of him. And he's gone. And I have to live without a father. And that's because somebody that was raped and molested as a child carried it down generationally. This generational trauma that we have endured, it doesn't have to be just the residential survivors. It doesn't have to be the ones that died. It's everyone else, us as a community, us as a culture. It has affected us. You cannot expect... One thing I like to say to people is, what if I came to your house and I stole your children and I molested them? What if I came to your house and I stole your house, I stole your land, and I raped your wife and I killed your mother? And then I left a bottle of booze. What would you do? Would you escape? Would you drink it? Or would you go on your happy little way and get over it? Is it something easy to get over when everyone in your community has suffered this? Is it something easy to get over when you have new children because your other ones were taken and you have a gaping hole missing? You don't know. These people didn't know where their children went. These people, these 215 children, on top of the other 4,100 children that are documented, what about the ones that aren't found yet? Like, this is serious. And it affects us all. And it affects everybody. Young, old, the new generations, it does, because it's passed down. Energy is passed down in our DNA. This happens. Trauma can be passed down in our DNA. And people need to realize, I hear a lot of people that say, it wasn't my lifetime. I actually attended an Indian day school. Quinny Mohawk here on Tinanega Reserve, Tinanega Territory, was deemed a resident, there was residential schools initially, but then it was an Indian day school until 1996-97. So that was not long ago. That was a decade ago. You know, that was like within our lifetime. This is not old news. This all happened within our lifetimes, and it continues to happen. And I thank you for your support. And I just want everybody to know this does affect everyone. And this has affected me. You know, the abuse that my family has endured, and even that I hear regularly over Facebook and over everything, people just have no education. And I appreciate that you're here to educate yourself. And I hope that you educate other people. And I'm glad that these babies are coming home. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you for what you said, by the way. That was beautiful, and I'm very sorry for your loss, very much so. I didn't get to get raised in my culture, my community, because my great-grandfather was removed from his to go to this school. I'm sorry. I'm trying not to. because he was removed from his home to go to this place, and he was a broken child going home to an insane parent. His parent tried his hardest to do what he could. Gabriel did what he could for Henry, and tried to support him, but Henry didn't know who he was. And because of that, my grandmother didn't get to know really who she was. We knew where we came from, but we didn't know who we were. And because of that, there's a whole generation of us who don't know who we are because of these schools. We don't know where we belong. These schools didn't just affect the children that went to them. They affect all of us, like she was saying, for generations to come. All of us are affected. None of us know where our roots belong. Some of us are just finding out our culture in our 30s, 40s, and 50s. Some people never even got to know their culture. And these babies, could have been somebody's elders to help teach that culture. These babies were somebody's heart. They were somebody's soul. They were somebody's everything. They weren't just one person's. They were an entire community's everything. They didn't just take away 215 babies. They took away 215 brothers, 215 sisters, 215 cousins, grandchildren. These children are felt for now and forever because of this. We have been saying these children were there. There are more that are under these schools that need to be found. Because for generations, we've been saying these children were there and nobody believed us. And now that we have found these babies and they get to go home, maybe now somebody will believe us and we will actually get the justice for all of these babies that they deserve. Thank you.
We'd again like to take a minute of silence, 215 seconds of silence for these lost lives. As we've heard tonight, it's not just 215 lives. There are thousands of lives impacted. And just again, thank you all for being here. If a minute, 215 seconds of silence. Thank you, everybody. That was what we had planned this evening for the vigil. By all means, this certainly doesn't mean that we have to stop being together as a community in a collective. If anyone has shoes, they're welcome to bring them up to the front. But this is just a space that we wanted to make for us to be together in this collective anger, this collective grief, and hopefully what translates to collective action after today. Thank you so much for being here tonight, everybody.
I was just asking if you had talked to the city about leaving these shoes, because St. Mike's, we did this for the other day, and they were removed by the church. So, is City Hall going to remove them, or are we going to keep them?
What would we like to do is keep them. That's probably more the answer.
Okay, so is this acknowledged by the City Hall?
It was in the public. We did not extend an invitation formally to this City Hall.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted everybody to be aware that there was a member of our community who set up these things at two different churches, one here in Belleville, St. Mike's, and one in Tandanega. And on the third day, the shoes were removed from St. Michael's Church here in Belleville. So I was very disappointed to hear that, the lack of support and the amount of criticism I've heard from different people, non-Indigenous people, has been mind-blowing. But I just wanted to ask if these shoes, I'm curious to see if they'll stay or if they'll go. And then we know.
Okay.